Good afternoon and welcome to our conference call, during which we will discuss our operational highlights and financial results for the first quarter of 2016. With me today are Harold Goddijn, our CEO, and Taco Titulaer, our CFO. You can also listen to the call on our website, and a recording of the call will be available shortly afterwards. As usual, I would like to point out that Safe Harbor applies. We will start today's call with Harold, who will discuss the key operational developments, followed by a more detailed look at the financial results and the financial outlook for 2016 from Taco. We will then take your questions. With that, Harold, I would like to hand over to you.
Good afternoon and good morning. Thank you very much, Bezerra. Welcome to our earnings call. We have started the year with a solid revenue growth driven by our sports and business-to-business activities. We generated group revenue of 217 million euro, which is 6% higher year-on-year, and we delivered a strong gross margin of 57%, which is 3 percentage points above last year. Taco will provide further information on the financial highlights and the financial outlook for 2016 later during this presentation. I will now discuss our key operational highlights for the quarter. In consumer, we saw strong growth in our sports activity in the quarter. The sell-out amounts of our sports watches nearly doubled year-on-year, and the new watches are winning numerous awards, which is another proof point of our success in this segment. In the PND market, we saw a unit decline of 13% in Europe, whilst the North American market declined by 22% year-on-year. Our market share in both regions improved slightly year-on-year. Our telematics business continued to perform well. The installed base reached 625,000 subscribed vehicles by the end of the quarter and delivered a 30% growth compared with last year. Automotive delivered a strong performance in the quarter, and we announced many customer deals. PSA Group launched its new global infotainment platform, which is built on a full suite of TomTom products: maps, navigation and software, and live services. We announced an agreement to deliver maps and navigation to the new Volkswagen smartphone app, and we extended our partnership with Fiat Chrysler and Toyota this quarter. We also extended HD map and RoadDNA coverage in California and Nevada, enabling self-driving car testing in key regions of the U.S. Autonomous driving continues to push boundaries. At TomTom, we are excited to be playing a role in enabling the automotive industry to bring this closer to reality. RoadDNA is attracting considerable interest from the industry and leading car makers. Let me now briefly summarize our group's strategic priorities on slide three. Our activities are organized around four customer-facing business units that leverage our brand capabilities and common technology assets to provide our customers with industry-leading location-based products. We've made substantial progress with our core technologies across the group over the recent years, and this gives us confidence that we're well-positioned to capture growing opportunities in the area of consumer wearables, automotive driving, connected car, and telematics. These areas all require the technological and product expertise that TomTom is able to provide and form an important part of our growth strategy, product roadmap, and investments for the foreseeable future. We are determined to further build on our path of growth. This can be achieved through growth from non-PND product sales while extracting value from the PND category. With the introduction of our own branded GPS sports watches and action cam, we've diversified the consumer product portfolio into the sports market, and we aim to continue to build on this with innovative new products. Our new map-making platform is essential for creating a stronger market position, as well as for pursuing new opportunities in the automotive and location-based services market. Our strategy in automotive is working, and that is reflected in the order intake growth over the recent years. Our product portfolio delivers scalable, efficient-to-develop products to our customers and is gaining significant interest in the industry. We believe that our map-making platform, together with our traffic and navigation software and our telematics capabilities, will enable TomTom to pursue further growth with existing and new customers for the connected car, advanced driver assistance systems, and autonomous driving. We are committed to play a leading role in creating positioning technologies for HD maps for autonomous driving, and both recent product launches and contract wins are important proof points that we are delivering according to plan. The underlying industry dynamics for our fleet management business remain favorable. A combination of short return on investment for our customers and an under-penetrated market allow us to plan for long-term growth of our telematics revenue. On top of this, we see new opportunities arising in the connected car services industry. Our navigation products and connected car services are complementary and in combination form a strong product portfolio. Our business will continue to require high levels of investment in the new future, and this is needed to support delivery of new business and sustainable future growth of TomTom. This concludes my part of the presentation, and now handing over to Taco.
Thank you, Harold. I would like now to comment on the financial results. Revenue in the quarter was €217 million, an increase of 6% compared with last year. Our sport, automotive, licensing, and telematics businesses grew strongly to offset the reduction in P&D and automotive hardware revenue. Now the four business units. Consumer, the revenue was down 4% year on year to €117 million. This is a result of a strong growth in our sports activities. As already mentioned, we saw the sellout amount for sports watches doubling year on year. This growth is counterbalanced by lower P&D and related content and services revenue and by lower automotive hardware revenue. Automotive had a strong quarter with €30 million of revenue. This is a 26% revenue growth year on year, driven by growth in maps and traffic revenue, underpinned by the order intake of the last several years. Our licensing revenue was €34 million in the first quarter, a 16% growth compared with the same quarter last year. Do need to point out here that this is an increase from new customer wins, but also renewing of and extending of existing customer contracts, which we commented on in the second quarter of 2015. Q2 2015 involved a €5 million catch-up, which will not be there in Q2 2016. Telematics revenue was up by 19% year-on-year to €37 million. The recurring subscription revenue for the quarter increased by 28% year-on-year to €29 million. Our monthly subscription ARPU decreased slightly year-on-year owing to the impact of the acquisitions. We delivered a strong gross margin in the quarter of 57%, which is 3 percentage points higher compared with 54% in Q1 2015. This year-on-year increase was mainly driven by a higher proportion of content and services revenue in the quarter. OPEX for the quarter was €128 million compared with €150 million in the same quarter last year. This increase is driven by increased SG&A expenses, reflecting growth of our workforce and higher marketing to support our new and broader product range. We expect the run rate for OPEX in 2016 overall to be up with approximately 10% versus 2015. We delivered a net result of €5 million this year, which translates in an adjusted earnings per share of €0.03 on a fully diluted basis. At the end of the quarter, we reported a net cash position of €50 million. Our cash flow used in operating activities for the quarter was €80 million, €5 million higher compared with last year. The cash flow used in investing activities during the quarter increased by €7 million to €31 million, mainly reflecting increased investments in map content, our map making platform, and customer specific investments. Let's now move on to our outlook for 2016, slide 5. We are reiterating our guidance for the year. We expect revenue of around 1,050,000,000 euro. The adjusted earnings per share is expected to grow by around 10% to 23 euro cents. And we expect the level of investments in both CapEx and OPEX in our core technologies to be higher than last year. In particular, we're investing in advanced content and software for the automotive industry and in our new map making platform. That concludes the formal presentation, formal part of the presentation. I would now hand over for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we will take our first question from Andrew Gardner of Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the question. I was hoping to get a bit more detail on the automotive side of the business. I was just sort of interested in an update on the competitive dynamics and customer positioning, and more specifically, I was wondering whether you've noticed any change in customer approach to sourcing since the announcement of the HERE sale to the three German automakers. Has there been any sort of change in how these guys are approaching contracts?
Yeah, Andrew, thank you. Yeah, there is there are a number of trends, I think, in the automotive industry that are worth commenting on. I think, first of all, it seems to us, it looks, and there's increasing evidence that NDS as a map format is taking hold. That's important for us. It's a new industry standard. We are seen as leading in that domain, both in terms of map compilation, incremental updates, and software. I think that's a good trend for us. It also reduces the cost of switching for existing customers, and all of that is plays in our favor because we have to gain market share. We see that our full suite of technology is maturing, and that leads to more contract wins. We also have seen a strong first quarter in terms of order intake. We will not disclose the exact number, we'll do that later, but we are on track in winning customers. And we also see that there is quite some uncertainty about HERE that will not last forever, but there is uncertainty, and that means that it's easier for us to get access to new customers and talk about future opportunities. So it will take time to exactly understand what HERE is going to do and how that will develop. But I think for the moment, this is a good time for us to strengthen relationships, build new ones, and win deals.
Okay. Thank you for that. Also, sort of picking up on some of your final comment there, I'm just wondering from a strategic perspective whether you see any shift. I mean, there continues to be talk of other companies joining or investing in HERE, including some very big tech players. Amazon and Microsoft have been talked about in recent weeks. Would that type of activity change your view on needing to partner in this part of the market?
We'll need to see, Andrew. I think it's too early to comment. We really need to wait until there's white smoke coming out of the German factories to really understand what that consortium will look like and what is the appropriate reaction would be for us.
Understood. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Mark Hesselink of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. The first one is also coming back on the automotive one. If you're looking now at market shares, what do you think that the share that you're taking in the market at the moment? And also there, is there do you see some activity outside TomTom or HERE? Now that with Android Auto, you see that also there, Hyundai using the Google Maps. What are you seeing on that front? And then secondly, you launched the now multiple geographies, the high definition map. How is that being used at the moment? Is that being used by partners? Is it being used in general by a lot of players in the market? Do you get data in return, or do you get some returns already on that one? Could you explain that a bit in a bit more detail, please?
Yeah. First question, what is our market share and order intake? So what percentage of available business are we winning? It's difficult to give you a number there, but we think it's significantly higher than what our current market share is in shipments. We're confident that we're winning market share at the moment, but I can't put an exact number on the percentage there. Second question is Google and Apple going into the dashboard. Yeah, we see that happening. We see that some car makers and head unit vendors are offering screen replication functionality for both Google and Apple. But we also see that the penetration of built-in navigation in cars is going up at the same time. It's still surprising that there is still a big market to win for built-in navigation. We see penetration rates going up, not down. The car industry is unwilling to hand over the keys of their infotainment system to what could potentially be competitors. They want to keep a control and influence on what's happening in the dashboard. And I think, you know, everybody in the car industry is really busy organizing themselves and getting better at software. And I think that's in a favorable development for us. On the last item, what's happening to with road DNA and HD maps? So we do a lot of stuff for the car industry and for autonomous driving, but our core products are road DNA and high definition maps. High definition maps are maps that reflect all the lines and the barriers and the crossings in high level of detail and precision that is needed to understand where the car is and where it needs to go to for longer term planning. And we provide road DNA, and road DNA is a product for localization. So the GPS signal alone is not accurate enough to determine the position of a car on the road. Road DNA is technology that helps achieving, you know, up to 10 centimeter accuracy, knowing where that car is, and that is important for steering it and planning the movements of that car. We're working with a number of car makers. They're also in development and research phase, as you can understand. A lot of car makers are using our maps, testing them, integrating them in their software. We get feedback for that, both on the map itself and road DNA. That is important for us, so we understand what the needs are and how those needs are developing. But those products are not in production yet, in the sense that they are shipped with cars. So we don't get, at this moment, sensor-derived observations back from car makers to maintain those maps and detect changes and errors in the data set that we provide. But it's definitely part of our plan, of course, to close that loop you know, help with positioning, but also get data back from the car to understand where the cars are out of date, where the maps are out of date.
Okay, thanks. That's clear. Maybe as a follow-up, how do you see that product, so the combination of road DNA and the high definition map, how does that compare to the competition at the moment?
Well, so people are trying different things. I think there are, with our technology, offers a number of advantages. We are capable of compressing it very effectively. It works. It is it is forgiving for noise. All that is of course really important. I don't think it's too. The time is now to call for a winner. Everybody's working hard and refining the technologies and testing the technologies. But it is too early to call victory. But we are encouraged by the results and the feedback we get from our strategic partners.
Thanks.
We will take our next question from Francois Bouvigny of UBS. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hello, thank you for taking my questions. I have a couple, if I may. So the first one is on your take-up market share rate. How do you explain it? I mean, what is the main driver behind it? Is it because Nokia Hero is in transition, for example, or is it price-related, product-related? So if you could give us some colors, would be great. The second one that I had is like, how can you give us a sense of the shape of revenues in 2016? I mean, given that you have strong revenues in automotive, would be interesting to see how you see it shaping. And the last one is your relationship with Volkswagen. I mean, it's been 9 months now that Nokia here has been bought. How do you see this relationship going forward? Is there any like disruptions in this strategic relationship, or maybe from your point of view, are you less, more reluctant to work with them? I mean, can you give us a view on this? Thank you.
Yeah. So on a market share gain, is that product related, price related? What is it? I think it's I think OEs like our story, our approach. We've proven over years that we are reliable partners in bringing products to market successfully. We are building on our reputation. Our map quality has improved significantly over the last 3 years. Our customers like our real-time map story. We are leading in traffic. We're leading in routing. So there's a lot to go for. And I think all that is coming together now, and there's more and more proof points that we're actually delivering according to plan. So it's really a combination of product quality, technology, roadmap, but also we continue to build on our reputation of being a reliable partner and vendor. I hand over the revenue development line. Hand it over to Taco, but before that I will give you some comments on the Volkswagen relationship. I think, you know, we have a good relationship with Volkswagen, but I think it's too early for us to judge how that relationship will develop over the coming years. I think we need to see what's happening with here, how they're going to play that, and then understand exactly what the future will bring. I can't comment more than that on this.
Yeah, on the shape, the revenue mix, it's interesting to note that in the first quarter, for the first time, I think ever, we saw content and service revenue being larger than hardware revenue in the mix. It's also reflected in the gross margin that we report of 57%. That is a proof point. What we said earlier in the year, 2 months ago, that we see telematics and automotive will continue to grow. Licensing is expected to end up flat year over year for the full year, and consumer also flattish, where we see a decline in P&D, what is compensated by the growth of our success in the sports segment.
Okay, and your sports segments, I mean, can you give us an update on 2016? What is your target here?
Yeah, so we provide an update on that on a yearly basis, what the actual revenue is. What we can say as an indicator is that the sell-out, which we track because we see the activations of users using our product, has gone up. It has doubled year over year, Q1 compared to Q1 last year. It's an indication of growth. We don't want to provide at this point exact numbers, but we're looking at double-digit growth, and I mean high double-digit growth.
Great, thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Saul Rubin of Haitong Securities. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hello. Just with respect to the gross margin, you know, it's been it's better today than it has been for a while. You talk about the revenue mix change driving that. I just wonder, as we go forward, should we expect the gross margin to continue to rise from here?
No. So 2 months ago, when we gave guidance, we guided towards a 2 or 3 basis points increase of our gross margin. Two months later, I think we can be a bit more bullish, so more 2 or 3 to 4 basis points increase compared to last year. On the other hand, due to the success of our order intake, we will see also some additional OPEX, so bottom line, the effect is neutral. Gross margin with the change of our product mix, the change of the business units contributing to our revenue, will see increase indeed over the coming years.
Okay, thank you. And second question, you talk about the inventory being higher in the first quarter, and I just wondered whether that's I understand the delivery.
Yeah, there are three things here. One is that we decided to put a bit more on boats compared to planes, so that it's longer in our position. The other thing is that with broadening our lineup in consumer, widening the number of SKUs, there's also an underlying trend that we need to keep a bit more inventory. And the third one is that we bought some product forward. All in all, this is all according to plan.
Okay, very good. And my final question, you know, you talk about extracting value from the P&D business as it declines, which I guess means you will continue as long as you generate cash from that business. And, you know, I just wondered whether a point is reached at which you do think about exiting the business, and in particular the U.S. business, which is a relatively small part. Are we getting close to the point where you might, you know, evaluate the situation such that an exit from that business in the U.S. may be better for the company?
Now, I don't want to speculate on that at this point. That's not what we plan to do, and that's it. I can't make few comments for the future for what we're going to do, either in P&D or in North America at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
We will take our next question from Hans Lobb of Rabobank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions. First is on automotive. Should we expect that sales growth for automotive will accelerate in the course of 2016 also, as the large PSA contract is now on stream? That's my first one. And second is on well, your wins in automotive are very impressive. More clients are dual sourcing. But given the long lead times of contracts, should we also expect OPEX and CAPEX growth to continue also in 2017 based upon the strong order intake?
Yeah, Hans, thank you for asking that question.
You know my answer on these questions, but especially on the latter one. But on the first one, we guided for automotive that we will see high teens growth. As we had 26% in the first quarter, that means that it will not accelerate during the rest of the year. Because Q4 last year, for example, we also already saw automotive turning the corner and starting to grow again, etc. But anyway, this is all according to plan. There's no change in guidance, but Q1 was a bit stronger than what we see in the rest of the year as a percentage growth. On OPEX and CAPEX, what I said on the gross margin, so that we expect gross margin to be a bit stronger in 2016, I think OPEX will be a bit higher in 2016. CAPEX, I don't expect any growth compared to previous or a higher number than what we gave earlier in the year. And for 2017, yeah, you need to wait 10 months, and then we'll give you an update on that.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot.
As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Shyam Kumar of TT International. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Harold. Thanks for that. Just in terms of the order book for automotive, can you just help me understand, is that pretty much all from navigation capability demand from the OEMs, or is there also demand within there for ADAS and autonomous functions starting to come through now in the order book?
Nothing is coming through for autonomous driving except for test licenses. But the amount of money involved there is really small, to be honest.
Okay.
ADAS is firmly on the radar. Is firmly also in the order intake. So that's coming through. That's happening. So all sorts of safety functions derived from map data are starting to get integrated on a larger scale now in more cars. So that's happening as well. The last development I'd like to point out in automotive is also that we are getting closer with our telematics products into the automotive industry. And that is not for fleet management, typically, but for connected car services. We've started to build in the flexibility on that platform in our telematics platform to service those type of use cases. We're starting to go out with those products and show them to the automotive customers, and we think we will get some traction in that part of the business as well.
Perfect. And also, in terms of, I guess, the timeline for autonomous and more highly automated driving, I went to, there was a Goldman's conference in New York where they had this Cars 2025, lots of big suppliers, Tesla, Mobileye, those kind of characters were there. And it seemed like the timeline had shortened in terms of what people thought maybe a year or 18 months ago in terms of when these kind of capabilities will be brought into the car. And I guess also with the Tesla autopilot having caused a bit of a splash as well of late in terms of some excitement around there in terms of the sort of seeming autonomy there. What are your views on the timeline and when that might start feeding through into your backlog, please?
I find that difficult to say at this stage. I think it will be a gradual path to more autonomy in the car. It will not be a big splash. It will be a gradual improvement to higher levels of automation. There is, of course, a big moment in time where you go from 99% self-driving to 100% self-driving. I think you know, getting that last percent right is obviously critical and probably the hardest thing to achieve. And that's also when you get the full benefit for the highly detailed maps that we are providing. And the need for those HD maps when the cars are semi-autonomous is less and not as important. At the same time, there will be intermediate products also from us that will help guidance. So even if those maps that we're now producing are not used for autonomous driving, they will be used for better visualization, increasing situational awareness, and lifting the whole navigation experience to a level that we have not seen before in terms of accuracy and clarity. So also for the maps that we're producing, we see a gradual introduction where they will start to become visible, but they're not necessarily used to the 100% of where they were designed for in the beginning. Now, you know, timing, difficult. I personally, I don't think that that 100% self-driving car will be there on the road before 2020. But you know, I'm also not 100% sure of all the developments, and of course, car makers treat this type of information also as trade secrets and commercially sensitive. So there's not 100% transparency in who will be first and what will happen exactly.
Okay, and I guess in terms of that's fine. Thanks, Harold.
We will take our next question from Sander van Oort of Kempen. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Sander van Oort, Kempen. Quick question on the new map-making platform. Maybe you can update us on the status where we are today. Is it already fully implemented, or is it still some regions that need to go to the new platform? So, and then as a bit of a follow-up on the financial implications, are we still confronted with some double running costs, which negatively impact the cost level this year? And could we maybe expect some lower costs or cost savings in the years to come from the new platform? Thank you.
Yeah, Sander, it is implemented in most for most territories. I would say 90% of the territories are running now the new map-making platform. There are very few that are not. Australia's one because it was an acquisition. Yes, last year we bought a mapping company last year, so we haven't transformed them. But it's now our mainstream product. It's in full use. We're tuning it. We're getting rid of the, you know, of the, let's say the it is a full production. We are tuning it. We're getting better results every day from that platform. And that is good. Before we get the full benefit, so this whole platform is really designed to lay the foundation for automated map making. Map making is still a very laborious job. We want to have much higher degrees of automation going forward. And having that platform is kind of foundational, because if now we can start the automation of map making itself, and that is really exciting, obviously, because that has a promise of reducing map making cost and improving quality and freshness of the map by a factor. That's not where we are today. We're not much more efficient than we used to be. But we will build on that efficiency soon, and then we will see real cost benefits and quality benefits and timing benefits coming through in 2017 and beyond. This is a transition year. We're adapting our processes. We will change the organization. We have much more flexibility in how we can organize our work and our workforce. So that will give advantages. And then the real advantages of automation will come through in 2017 and beyond.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Sander. That was the last question for today's call. I would like to thank you all for joining us this afternoon. If you have any follow-up questions at a later time, please give us a call or send us an email. Thank you all very much.